Hey, this is Jadi, and this is the Cafecito Time con Jadi podcast show. My next interview is with Edwin Rosario Masara. He is the founder of the literary magazine Spanglish Voices, as well as the founder and producer of the YouTube talk show La Sala Talks. Edwin and I, we discuss politics, community, what it's like to be a Dominican. We also talk about his La Sala Talks and Spanglish Voices. I really enjoyed this interview because Edwin is very insightful and he keeps you engaged because his conversations requires a lot of critical thinking. So I really enjoy this conversation a lot. And also my favorite interviews are with people from my community. Edwin is from Inwood. But he currently resides in Washington Heights. So here is my interview with Edwin Rosario Masara.
Today we have Edwin Rosario Masara. He is the founder of the literary magazine Spanglish Voices, as well as the founder and producer of the YouTube talk show La Sala Talks. Welcome, Edwin. Thank you for coming. Thank you for saying yes to this.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure. When you called me and you extended the invitation, I jumped on it and said yes right away because I heard the episode you did on with another cool friend of mine, JP.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's a dope show. I got to be on there.
Yeah. And then I hit you up.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up and how you got to the position that you got right now.
Yeah. I grew up in Inwood. Mm-hmm. So I was born, of course, like all of us who live up in uptown in northern Manhattan, we were all born in the hospital on 168th
and
Broadway. So I was born in Washington Heights, but I lived all my life, at least to when I was 18 or 19 in Inwood.
Mm.
To run was for a lot of reasons that I'm not going to get into.
Yeah, no, you don't need to.
All the way to Nassau, to Long Island. So I was living in Baldwin, Island, then ended up in Jersey and Teaneck, and then ended up back here. But this time I live in Washington Heights. Currently, I'm the director of communications for the senator's office. But before that, I was working for the city and the Department of Consumer Affairs. So I nothing that I do as far as my platforms, wherever my source of income, my livelihood, those have always been projects that were passionate to me, you know, La Sala Talks and Spanglish Voices. I'm hoping that, you know, in the future they would become that, but in the meantime, we have to pay bills, so I have a day job. And don't get me wrong, I don't complain. It's a good job and it's exciting. I do a lot of good things. You know, the real gritty work that's behind the scenes to get a lot of things for the community, That's where we're at. So it's satisfying, you know, and it doesn't pay bad either. It takes care of the bills.
Okay. And why did you create a La Sala Talk? Let's start with one of your first passions.
So that project was actually on my mind for years. Actually, when I was back living in Jersey. So this is a project that I had in mind between 2013 to 2016, around there. And in 2016, I actually started it, but it didn't have that name.
Yeah.
But the idea was there. And we recorded a video and we put it up on I put it up on my Facebook page and everything. But then after that, life happened and it just got thrown back to the back burner. So in 2017, I decided, okay, I want to do this, let's do it. I didn't know how to edit on a computer, any type of, you know, format. I didn't know how to use a camera. I didn't know anything, but I wanted to do it. So I decided to call a good friend of mine and told him if he wanted to be a co-host. I asked a bunch of other friends as well. And we just decided to go ahead and try to do it. I always enjoy watching talk shows, but not that those type of talk shows that dominated like the airways in the early 2000s, like the Jerry Springer and stuff like that. But not even Oprah. I didn't like that format. My thing was more like of a Charlie Rose type of talk show.
Yeah.
It was just a plain setting you know, nothing special, no ningún bulto. It was just, you know, two people sitting down having a nice, good, solid intellectual conversation. But the only twist that I wanted to add to it was that I wanted it to be very much suited to my personality, who I was. And yeah, that's on the show you see that I have invited activists, politicians, musicians, writers, actors, everything, because besides the acting part, because I never done that, I did go to school for it for a bit and I dropped out right away because I knew it wasn't for me. But all the other stuff I'd done in my life. So it kind of also represents the passions that I hold on to. But furthermore, the things that I also want to highlight and expose out there with a different taste. You know, there's a whole bunch of shows that does a lot of funny, you know, comedy and shit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go down that route. I wanted to go down a route that, yeah, we could enjoy the conversation, but it had to be definitely intelligent conversation with a strong point to it, you know, promoting something specific, which is critical thinking. But we have fun doing it. You know, when people come to La Sala, we sit down, we have these talks, even having a drink. You know, everybody sees us with the mugs, and inside the mugs, some of us have coffee, some of us have alcohol, because it's what it's supposed to be. It's a nice conversation in La Sala. You know, you could be having your coffee or your alcohol, and you start talking with your friends or with your family about everything. So that's what we pretty much do. But with the hopes, again, of promoting critical thinking, not just, you know, I had enough of listening to Platano jokes and all the other stereotypes that's done out there. So I wasn't going to go down that route. One, because it's not me, and two, because I think there's enough of that. It's hard because people do tend to probably enjoy that other stuff more. But there are a lot of people out there who also want to see this type of format and this type of content.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, that's why that idea came about. I'm very, very much socially aware, very political. So that's basically all the conversations we have go in that direction, even when it's not about as straightforward as what people might consider political, because everything is political. It's just everything. Not partisan. It's not partisan, and that's what we don't do. But we do, everything we speak about is very political, highly political. Because everything we do, it's just that, you know, even when you want to be apolitical, you're taking a political stance by doing that as well. Yeah. So that was the birth of that, as far as La Sala.
Yeah. It's funny because La Sala, like just the format of it is, I mean, us like Latinos and us like mostly Dominicans, that's what we are, Dominicans. We do that. We sit in the sala and we sometimes drink and we just conversate and stuff like that. And it's funny because the whole theme, the whole idea of like my podcast was starting in the kitchen, drinking coffee and discussing like our issues. So that's how this whole thing came about. It just became like a therapy talk. And but what have you learned about yourself from doing the salas? From like, have you learned anything from your guests?
Yeah, from the guests, of course. Every guest that, because I mean, in life, if you're really humble about life and about learning, if you're a narcissist and an arrogant fuck, then of course you think you don't learn anything and you know it all.
Yeah.
But I have never lived life like that. I practically enjoy conversations and dialogue, even with people who have different opinions or worldviews from me, because even from them, you tend to learn something, you know. So everyone who does come into the show, of course, I learn a lot from them. I learn many things. My sense of empathy definitely has grown because of many of the guests that I have also invited over to the show. Because, sometimes we take for granted, you know, a lot of the privileges that we have.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guests that have been in the show, they share some of those privileges too, but I know of a lot of them who have really gone through some shit to be able to get to the point where they're at. So it definitely gives me a lot of energy. You know, it makes me more mindful of how I tend to react or even how I embrace any type of perspective that might be severely subjective, because we all do that once in a while. and challenge myself constantly so I could be more objective about anything that I see. And many of the guests who have come here have also learned from us. You know, my co-host, he's a pretty smart dude. He's a young cat, but he's extremely smart. And he has brought, you know, certain things to the table when we were doing the show here, you know, and pre-pandemic, that has also, you know, contributed to a lot of the guests leaving from here with something. So they always leave with something from us, and we always get something from them.
Yeah.
Which is the whole point of the show too. And you know, it's for all of us to take, you know, and learn, you know, and challenge ourselves with whatever mindset you might have of any issue or, you know, of any case. From a technical standpoint, not from my guests, I have learned a lot because I am able to edit videos without ever doing a course. Premiere and Final Cut, I have been able to, it's very costly because I bought a lot of equipment. At first I brought some equipment and I had to then buy better equipment to get to that quality of a 4K video or better audio, you know, wireless microphones and stuff like that. And in doing that, you know, and talking to people who know, you know, at these places where I was buying these things and people who have their own shows or whatever, I was able to start talking the lingo. Like I was, you know, this all of a sudden this producer and shit.
Yeah.
Knowing what this mic does, knowing what the lights do, knowing what this does. And yeah, you know, it's extremely difficult to do it. People just see the end result and see you sitting in a mueble and talking. Oh, there's a lot of shit that goes behind the camera to get it. And it's very time consuming as well. But I enjoy it.
Well, what would you say to someone that wants to start like a web talk show?
I would tell them go for it. I would just tell them to be mindful that you do have to dedicate time to it.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to be invested in it, that doesn't mean that you have to drop everything and drop your job and all of that. But you definitely have to challenge yourself and be able to structure yourself in a way that would allow you to do it. Because it takes a lot of time. You know, even this podcast that you're doing, you know, it takes time. We're taking an hour, you know, of our time. We're sitting down, you are recording it, then you have to edit and you have to clean it out and all of that other stuff. And then you have to upload it on whatever platform you know, whatever outlet you use to get it to all the podcast formats. And that shit takes time, you know, and people don't appreciate that. You know, some people don't appreciate it because they either see the end result or they just want this better quality. Like, you know, shit, I don't got a Netflix studio. You know, I got to do what I can.
Yeah.
And if I had that, believe me, I would be doing a whole lot of other things that would be so much better. But I will always tell them, you know, don't give up. Of course, you're going to get moments of frustration because it is frustrating. And, you know, be yourself. And your soul into whatever type of platform you're going to do, whether it's a podcast, whether it's video, because when you start trying to emulate or copy shit that other people are doing, even if it makes you go viral, it's still not going to last, and you're not going to be happy doing it because eventually you're going to hit a wall unless you're just one of these people who want the attention, and want to be. Want to be gaslighting and making believe you know what you're talking about, then go, you know, fine, whatever. But, you know, be original.
Yeah.
Put your
has anyone ever reached out to you and told you that, like, one of your interviews, one of your episodes, like, it changed them and they learned something?
Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of people, whether via email, whether they have contacted me personally because they have my contact information, my number. But when I'm talking about the email for La Sala, because we have an email for La Sala, which is separate from, of course, from mine. Or even in the streets. Like I've literally bumped into people like last year. I remember in February last year before the whole pandemic hit fully here in the United States. I remember going to this place in Brooklyn to see a few friends of mine. So they were very good friends of mine, and I went to see them. And, you know, this guy out of the blue, he was like, oh, you're from La Sala, right? You're Edwin. And so you're like, I don't even know who the dude was. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. What's up? They go, yo, I love your show. And there was a lot of things that I used to hold on to, thinking that was the way it should be.
Yeah.
Specifically when it came about talking about the colorism and race relations and our own discrimination when in our community, Dominican community.
Yeah.
Has always been swept under the rug. His own stance where and his struggles with being very machista.
Yeah.
And he even alluded that there was some homophobic things that he didn't express it with the hate, but just out of hearing it, normalizing it, repeating.
Yeah.
And he says that through each episode he's seen, because I have had people from the LGBT community on my show. My first episode was with a dear friend of mine from DR who is an activist, he was a leader in the American Republic for the LGBTQ community. And the reason he came to New York was because he got blacklisted over there and he couldn't work. And he's a professor, because he was the one who led with a few others and created the gay caravan in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
You imagine this, this extremely conservative Catholic nation, and you have a gay caravan going down in Malecón for a few years when they were getting beat up by cops and arrested. Then it just became something that they had to let it happen because people were just joining in.
Yeah.
And he led that, so he had to come here, and he was the first guest that I had on. And I remember someone reaching out to me and saying, when I saw that you started with him and that was your first show, I knew that you were serious and you guys were going to do something special. And I go,
yeah.
And I go, yeah, that was the point of it. And my mother, even my mother has had different point of views, like different things. So, of course, she's much older than I, and she's such a traditionalist.
Yeah.
And everything. And she's seen my show, and now you hear her defending. Now she's the woke mother. over here defending shit. And I'm like, whoa, 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 hold on. Are you too radical now? Calm down. So, yeah, definitely. We've heard a lot from people who... but definitely are seeing things differently than they did before they started to watch any of the episodes that we have on our channel.
Okay. So you said something about what happened in our community over like last summer about just the race and also the machismo. What do you think about that? There was our neighborhood was on Twitter. We trended, not in a positive light. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that?
Do I believe
why we were trending? That they're saying that Dominicans are racist and
so the way it was framed, we can't and I'll say this in Spanish, no se puede tapar el sol con un dedo.
Yeah.
We know that we have these issues.
Yeah.
Community. We know we have these issues and they're very present and prevalent in the Dominican Republic. But to try to start a conversation by right away just screaming Dominicans hate everyone.
Yeah.
It's not the way to do it.
No, it's not.
And that by saying that, that doesn't mean that I agree with what happened. Because I mean, I've been talking about this on my show since 2018. So this was way before thing happened last year in the summer. On everything that you just mentioned, not just the race issue, but also machismo and everything else. And that particular case that you're talking about, what happened last summer, that was very unfortunate. And it was something that I wish people would have thought about clearly before they did it, because it does feed into a narrative. And not only a narrative of whether Dominicans hate Black people, because we're Black too, but that's that we're framing it on Twitter. But it does feed into this stereotype and this toxic culture of self-hate. You're Black and you're seeing another Black person as a menace, as a threat, as someone who could steal, someone who could take something from you. Because even though some of them thought that they had good intentions with going out there and trying to protect whatever small businesses they thought they were going to protect, that pretty much fed into the bullshit that was going on
yeah.
on NBC, on Fox News, and other bullshit, when they were just framing everybody who was a black body as a fucking vandal who was breaking businesses and doing this. So for them to chase those kids down the block, that was very unfortunate. And I know that some of the guys that were there were, you know, had good intentions, or at least they thought they had good intentions. But that's the problem when we don't talk these things and we just kind of leave it under the rug. A lot of good intentions get lost in translation because a lot of bad actions come to the forefront. Because there's a lot within our language, there's a lot within our behavior that has also fed into that type of, BS.
Yeah.
We all heard, I mean, I'm pretty sure you probably heard, no me traigo un negrito a la casa, o trata de arreglar la raza, and all this other shit. So, you know, all that shit is stuck in our head and while we're growing up. Unconsciously, we do carry out these unconscious biases, you know, and that was manifested in that action that happened last summer.
Yeah.
Now, the shit that happened on Twitter, I don't really pay attention to it because sometimes we think, you know, social media is like, it's this little world sometimes, and people think that it's real and there's a lot of reality to it.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that shit is bullshit. You could tell who are those who have certain type of, who live their life in a certain type of way that doesn't embrace the clout that people get. They get through having a lot of followers and a lot of likes. Bullshit by the contact that they put up also on their pages, you know. So I didn't pay a lot of attention to that trending shit, and I definitely didn't jump to either defend or not defend anyone from here, from the neighborhood, because of that, because I don't react to it, you know.
Yeah.
One, because I've already been talking about this for years. I don't have to wait for something to happen to get to come and jump on board on the way, because déjame hablar de esto ahora, the colorism, que si, okay, toda la cosa. And I've been doing it for years. I just didn't start doing it the other day, while I saw it. I've been doing that shit for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not 20. Entonces, I didn't pay mind to it. That narrative has been there for way before Twitter started.
Yeah, way before.
You know, I remember being in school and in junior high where I had to defend a lot of the cats that used to come from the Dominican Republic, you know, for the first time to this country, and I had to defend them in school because they would get beat up by, you know, Puerto Ricans, by African Americans, by old Dominican people who would view them as, you know, less just because they were new and they didn't speak English. So I always felt the hurt of this type of the divisiveness between us. This extremely unnecessary, but it's been, you know, pushed upon us by a system and structure that's in place to practically do that. So I would always confront that conversation from a standpoint that it's not an individual thing or a collective. It's not a Dominican thing, a Puerto Rican thing, African-American thing. No. It's a fucking system, you know, and because it's a system, we have to start talking seriously about these issues from that point of view. I remember getting into that specific case for Bronx Net, I think it was something like that. And I spoke clearly about that as well. We have to try to, you know, to bring these issues up constantly. But also I would suggest that we bring it up in a healthy way too. Like, you know, you don't have to tell other people that they're not black enough because they don't do this, or because you don't wear this, or because you don't talk this way or walk this way. I would just invite them to and ask them how do they feel and who they are, and see how do we get to that point where it's a healthy conversation. They have a healthy understanding of these issues.
What happened last summer was like what you said, was a very unfortunate incident. Because I know some of the people there that they clearly did not have bad intentions, but it, like you said, it translated the wrong way. But even though it's sad for them that happened to them, but at the same time, it opened up the conversation just a little bit in our community for those that were not aware of it. Well, not because I've been hearing the narrative about that since college, you know, like people always tell me that, and I'm always like looking at them like, that's not true, you know, because I didn't really believe it. It wasn't until I got out of my bubble that I started seeing it. But a lot of it stems from a lot of like lack of education and like knowledge and just lack of self-awareness.
Yeah. It's definitely a lack of understanding how structural racism seeps through every fucking thing we do in life. Because there's a whole bunch of educated people in college who carry this, you know, this toxic behavior with them, regardless of what, you know, status they have, whatever title they have, whether it's a bachelor, master's or whatever, and you still see them talking and acting, you know, in that way. So it was definitely important that those who participated last summer got called out to. That's also healthy as well. You know, I remember hearing people who wanted to come to the defense, not necessarily of them, pero de los Dominicanos and this nationalistic type of vibe, and let's defend the Dominicans because, you know, they're talking about us, as opposed to, you know, let's confront these issues. And as Dominicans, let's act the right way and call it out, which happened afterwards, and we did. And I think that it helped a lot because even many of those who participated afterwards were able to recognize, you know, the fault and whatever actions that they took. And that's powerful right there. You know, when people get to see their fault and see what's going on, then we're heading in the right direction with the conversation.
Yeah. Another topic that that came about, because a lot happened last year, other than COVID, other than the pandemic, other than this crazy election that was very traumatizing. And then a lot happened in our neighborhood, Black Lives Matter, that incident. But also the topic of machismo started coming about even more last summer. How can we start the conversation, like, for like the younger generation about machismo? How can we just kind of like get the younger generation plus the older generation to kind of like come to an understanding, because it seems like there's like a drift there.
It's definitely difficult to try to get the older generation to change many of their ways. As long as you as an individual, because if you start this dialogue directly with your own folks, lead by example with your behavior, they'll come around. And they definitely will come around, at least because they love you and they respect you, even if they still don't agree with you. But that's a win too. You know, that's a win. If you are capable of having anybody who's extremely close to you think twice about saying something or acting a certain way because they know that you disapprove of it, then at least you're beginning to win a little bit of the battle. But again, this is not an individual case by case thing either. This conversation always has to come about of the structural nature of this, you know, this culture of, you know, toxic masculinity and machismo. It's celebrated at all fronts by men and women, and that's why it's a problem. That's why it's not an individual thing, it's a structured thing. You hear women say, because I heard, you know, mothers say that around me when I was a kid, amarren su mujer porque mi perro andan suelto, que okay, como que, you know, some shit, you know, even that is feeding into it. This whole thing where the mother tells the women que they have to, que tiene que pararse a fregar, que si yo que, while the boys are just sitting down, you know, scratching their ass and not doing anything. That's part of it too. So there's a lot of shit that we have to, you know, we have to go through. What's beautiful at this point is that this generation, mine's, yours, the younger generation, they're definitely have taken upon themselves to start to try to change the narratives. Once you start that process and you start challenging those narratives, it definitely opens up a fucking well, and a lot of good things start to happen, a lot of confrontations, and, you know, and a lot of fear starts to get destroyed, which is more important as well. This, patriarchy didn't start with us. You know, it didn't start with last summer either. It's just been around for years. Everybody knows about, you know, the girl who was going out with the 30-year-old, 40-year-old drug dealer, and she was a teenager. You know, we also met when we were growing up. So we all know about la tía that was getting her, you know, beaten by her husband. A lot of us, including myself, grew up in a household where there was domestic violence. So this shit didn't just start, you know, now. Mm-hmm. It's been going on all of our lives. And that's why it's very difficult to overcome this trauma. From the perspective of a man, and it's one of the important things that did come out of the unfortunate things that happened last summer. A group of us decided to just start talking among themselves so we could try to create, you know, a space first for us where we could start challenging ourselves and challenging others within our core group. And then to try to make that trickle down to the younger kids who could then start branching out and doing it on their own too, because nobody has the answer. Nobody has the idea. And nobody's going to save anybody. That's bullshit. We're not going to end patriarchy today because I write an article like I did in Spanglish Voices talking about many things that could be done that are interesting, but that doesn't mean nothing is going to change with that. You know, it starts through a lot of actions from everyone. And then at the end, even most importantly, other than trying to create that bridge between the older generation and us, I think we have to create a real solid foundation to create a bridge of cooperation between, you know, all these men groups that are doing, they're trying to do that work, and all the female groups that are also doing the work as well.
Yeah.
And try to invite each other to see how we could collectively challenge this, because this is not one person problem. This is not a collective problem. This is a fucking societal problem.
Yeah.
And it's extremely, extremely, it's extremely ingrained in our culture.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Once we start looking at it, again, I look at everything from the political lens. So I'm never going to give you an answer like, this fabulous answer that we could just give you. A five-step program, and no, it's a heavy deal. It's structural. I get tener los pies sobre la tierra. You know, you got to be very firm and understand that this shit is going to be something that we all have to do together. It's not que no hagan ustedes por su lado, or no que lo hagan las mujeres por su lado, y que los hombres lo hagan por su lado. No, we have to really get together. So the best of us who have the best intentions, we really have to start sitting down and trying to not only talk among ourselves. And I don't mean by hashtagging and haciendo un bulto, you know, that everybody gets outraged when something happens and then it dies down.
But yeah.
Now I'm talking about like that real necessity to sit down, create a form of dialogue that helps us challenge this culture and hopefully plant the seeds for tomorrow, because we're not definitely going to end it now.
No. And you need a lot of patience.
Yeah,
because I remember when I was teaching my parents just about mental health, cogió como uno bueno 8 años, just to like, for her to like really like understand it. Race, they understand it, but it still could sometimes get a little intense, but they understand it now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, patience and great empathy too.
Yeah.
You don't win anything. If your focus and your true nature of your work is to try to get someone to see things differently,
yeah,
then you shouldn't start by trying to judge them and beat them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if we all want a chance to be able to be better, then why not give it to the next person too? Now, having said that, I'm not saying that we have to excuse things that are fucked up, you know, or make the space for someone who did some hideous shit, because that's not what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I'm definitely getting at the fact that we all been co-participants of this toxic culture at one point or another.
Yes.
Directly or indirectly, whether we want to recognize it or not, or whether we want to act now like we're fucking saints and we're super woke and all that other nonsense. You know, we all been in that fucking shit one way or another.
Yeah.
Directly, because sometimes you don't have to do things with purpose, but you still could hurt someone. Don't say, you know, who the fuck are you to be judging and trying to push anyone down? Let's start to talk. Let's start the dialogue and let's try to work this out to where we get to this better frame, you know, this better state of frame where we could actually start trying to get at the root of certain problems, which didn't start with us. It's thousands of years old.
Yeah.
And we'll be here after we die too. But at least if we start some type of movement that gets the younger generation to start thinking of new things, which a lot are, but even the younger ones that come after that, then, you know, definitely shit would change at one point.
Yeah. Where is Lasada Talks today? What is the road ahead for it?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, the pandemic threw a fucking wrench into what we were doing. We were at the point, we did a live show back in November of 2019. There was a speakeasy bar around here that closed down. It's no longer here. And we had three powerful women who work in the, you know, the arts and theater and filmmaking. And we had Rafa Beato, who was in, he was at that point in a series in Starz Channel.
Yeah.
And we had Saeed from Nagramawa play live for us. And that was the transition that we were starting to make from doing probably once in a while a show in the, you know, the regular space here in my sala, and taking it out, quote unquote, on the streets from different venues, so different venues in a live setting where there was gonna be people, special guests, and a musical band always, a musical art. Unfortunately, you know, that was in November 2019, you know, then the pandemic hit and it just messed up everything.
Yeah.
You know, I took to the IG Live thing like everyone else, then I got motivated at some point. Now I'm starting to, I started last week to record again. We recorded a nice show at the studio of one of the local artists from here. And we're going to continue to do some things like that here and there once in a while. I was definitely thinking about, because I do have a lot of those episodes that are on podcast format, on Spotify and everywhere else.
Yeah.
I was thinking about probably trying to do that for the moment, because we definitely have to wait until this kind of starts to get better, which hopefully might be the end of this year, the way
it's
going. But yeah, that's where we're standing now. As far as recording, I will probably do a thing here or there in an open, you know, different space with one or two guests, and that's it, where a lot of the precautions taken, making sure that by the time we get there to record, everyone has been, you know, tested already and stuff like that. But that's definitely where we're standing at now. And because, you know, we could only do so much because the pandemic, you know, it's a reality. We have to play safe.
Yeah. So Spanglish Voices, why did you start it in?
Yeah, so that project also came to mind at the same time that I spoke to my friend here, who's the co-host in La Sala, about creating La Sala. So basically both names, I came up with it at that moment. It happened on December 2017 as well, but for many reasons, that project stayed put as we started La Sala in 2018 and kept going. So Spanglish Voices then comes out in 2020, 3 years later almost.
Yeah.
Practically on June 2020, the summer 2020. And the reason, you know, I've always read a lot of magazines, you know, back in the days. I used to read, you know, a lot of The New Yorker and stuff like that. I found interesting that format, especially when it switched over to digital.
Yeah.
And I always thought about, you know, would it be cool to do, you know, a literary magazine that speaks to people like me that were born here, that could speak both languages well, or when I wish to speak and use both of them at the same time, I could do that as well. Which is Spanglish, you know, why not? Why not? It's something that speaks to us. Open it up to everyone. You know, if you want to write in Spanish only, then write in Spanish only. But the magazine also has pieces in English. And if you want to write in Spanglish, do it in Spanglish as well. And that's why that idea came about, is to create that space for, especially for emerging writers more than established ones. And that's what's been going on with the magazine. You know, we've been getting pieces from people who live in other countries, in Barcelona, in Puerto Rico, in South America, which has caught us by surprise. And it's pretty dope. Young, 18 or in their 40s, which is still young, or in their 20s, or even someone in their 50s wants to send us something too.
Yeah.
In every kind of way, you know, Spanglish, English, you know, whatever they feel comfortable with. You know, celebrating who we are, the duality of identity that we carry. You know, we were born here, but we're in a way immigrants as well, because our parents are immigrants.
Yeah.
We have at one point felt to not be embraced by, you know, the culture here, but if we went back to our parents' countries, we also felt that as well. I kind of never had that problem because I grew up in a block that was heavily, heavily populated by Dominicans who only spoke Spanish.
Yeah.
So when you hear me speak Spanish, you sometimes, you know, anybody who meets me and hears me speak Spanish, they think that I was born over there.
Yeah. But
lived for a bit over there as well. So I was able to navigate between both cultures, but I never felt from over there or from over here because I just don't give a fuck about that. I don't care to be from over there or from over here. I'm just me. I don't celebrate flags or national anthems. You know, I respect everyone who does, but that's just not me. I celebrate humans. I celebrate life, and I celebrate conversations. So what better way to have that, you know, in a magazine like that? And that was the point of creating it, Spanglish Voices.
Some people think that Spanglish is not a real language, but I feel like they don't understand what that is. What is what does Spanglish means to you?
Yeah, so you always have these arguments with people who hold, especially traditionalists or those who try to pave the way for this elite mindset. Mm-hmm. Where they think that when you use a dialect to communicate, it has to be a certain way. And that certain way is always, has always been thrust upon generations by an authority. La Real Academia Española, que Webster, que toda mierda, que sí, okay. And don't get me wrong, you know, each language in its own is beautiful. If you really want to listen to it and pay attention to it and maybe study the origin of it as well. But this dialect that we created here that, you know, that started with many, 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 many years ago, you know, you could trace back to, you know, the border, you know, with the Chicanos and Chicago as well. You could trace it back to LA. You could trace it back to Los Boricuas in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. And it comes about this struggle to not hold on to this colonial traditional mindset of your parents, but not also fully assimilate to what was being imposed on us here by this white European culture as well. So fuck it, we created our own shit. We speak both languages and we created one dialect that it's easy to understand for us. And you know, your first introduction, funny, well, at least my first introduction, which is a funny story, to the life of Spanglish was basically through folks who didn't speak English. You know, my mother, or not even my mother, but I'll say like my grandmother, my aunt, and stuff like that. When they were like, say one word in English that they learned because they had to learn it at work to be able to survive and defend themselves, or they were asking for directions and they mentioned the name in English. And when that's it, when they didn't have any more words in their arsenal of vocabulary for English, they would switch back into Spanish. You know, that was my first introduction to that. You know, cuando se le acababan las tarjetas de inglés, como decían ella, ya se me acabó la tarjeta, they would switch it up. And so they were sprinkling in that one or two, three words in English and then taking it back to Spanish and going back and forth. And that's basically what we do. That's the Spanglish that I celebrate. I know, and I'll be honest with you, and this might rub people the wrong way, but I'm honest, you know, there are people who overdo it, specifically when they're writing. They think that you have to, every two words has to be in English and Spanish in order for it to be the legitimate Spanglish, and you see this shit as forceful. So that's when you know it's someone who really hasn't embraced that culture, really understands.
Yeah.
than they're trying to jump on it because it's fucking cool now. ¿Entiendes? No, this shit is an identity. You know, you have to really embrace it desde la cuna. This shit doesn't just come out of the blue. Even one word that you speak in Spanish while you speak in English, yeah, you're talking in Spanglish. ¿Entiendes? So for me, it's beautiful. It's definitely a mode of communication. It's here. It's not going anywhere. It's been here for a while too, because it was here before I was here. And it's definitely going to be a staple. You know, you're seeing it on TV. You're seeing it in the mainstream already. You know, it's beginning to be forcefully introduced to everyone, whether they like it or not. So, que no le guste, que se tape los oídos, pero Spanglish is here for forever.
When I started, like for me, it is an identity, but it happened for me, like it was like on purpose. Like certain words that I can't pronounce in Spanish, I'll say in English. Certain words that I can't pronounce in English, I'll say in Spanish. So los dos vienen junto like that. And it just happens because I grew up in a household that just speaks only Spanish. But cuando estoy en la calle, when I would go to like school or work, I would speak English. So both words I was just like navigating.
No, yeah. But that is you forging your identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I mean by identity. I don't mean that you just pick it up and it's yours. You have an identity. It's through whatever means that you use to survive.
Because
you forge your own identity through it, you know, and that's why you speak it. That's why you communicate it, you know. Spanglish is a way of life. It's an identity. It's not just, you know, if people don't want to call it a language, fine. That's not calling it a language, but it's definitely a way of life.
Yeah.
It's an ID card for many of us. And because it's a way of life, that's why we're so fully invested in it, and we embrace it to the fullest.
Have you ever received any pieces that like really like touched you or like really taken you back? Like what? Like, wow, that was deep.
We've been fortunate, and I'll be honest with you, that most of the pieces that we have received are extremely good. Very, very dope writers have sent shit to us. And by shit, I don't mean in a despective way, just
more people.
They have sent beautiful, beautiful pieces. I'm not big on poetry, and even the poetry that I have read that has come our way has been like, wow, because you feel that it that I'm looking for when I'm reading something is that sense of social awareness, that political mind.
Yeah.
But you feel it in a lot of the things that has been sent to us, because it talks to you about a lot of those, you know, the daily struggles that we confront. But it doesn't do it in this cliche-esque type of way, in this cheesy way, in this repetitive type of way. You know, okay, yo nací aquí, pero no me quieren allá, and this other nonsense and this bullshit. But because we heard that for too many years already. So when you start hearing people just talking about, for example, there was a story about this person who spoke about his grandmother. And when you read it, you feel like you're talking to your grandma, whether she's alive or not. So that person didn't have to go down the route of what everyone else is repeating and doing, you know, Anasium. No, he did something that was honest. You know, he gave us his soul in that piece. And, you know, to this day, that person is extremely close to us, even though we never met. He definitely communicates a lot with me. And every time we do an open call for submission, you know, I get that message from that person. Listen, you know, I'm sending you something. And this is an established writer. And I don't mean established by that he's in mainstream, because he's not. I mean established that he's a professor of writing in Europe. He's from El Salvador.
Yeah.
You know, he's queer. He's extremely, extremely radical and unapologetic about his politics. And you can read it in his work, but it's not that I'm trying to let you see that I'm extremely woke and I'm this and I'm that and I'm proud. No, you feel it in the sense of how much he promotes understanding and empathy and sorrow for those who don't want to understand in his pieces. You know, and that shit is beautiful. You know, that shit touches you no matter what the story is about. I mean, because it's honest, you know, as long as the writer is honest, you will always get touched. So yeah, we received many pieces, you know, and even ones that we had, unfortunately, turned back, because we have received a lot. Even those, you find something in it. And we, you know, we're very kind and respectful when we do turn it back, because we do it in a way that we want to force the writer to continue to get better at their craft. So it's not because of what they're saying is not special. It's just that they have to polish it up a little bit more. Which would do good to them, because they're going to continue to send pieces elsewhere into other places where they're not going to be so nice when they get rejected, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. I've been touched by a lot of the pieces that I write there. They're all my favorite. I could say that very clearly. I'm not going to pick one, and you're not going to make me pick one now.
Yeah. How many calls or submissions do you guys have?
We already have four. Well, the fourth one just opened up now. We had one when the magazine first started, where we asked everyone, you know, to write something of what Spanglish meant to them. The second one was more of a theme around the time of Halloween y el Día de los Muertos. It was named El Cuco. So we were asking people to write about those stories, or, you know, that their grandparents told them, and, you know, back in the country, whether it was La Ciguapa, or like in the Dominican Republic, El Bacalo, or Chupacabra in Puerto Rico, which is, you know, new. And we did a nice little series of highlighting a lot of those urban legends and rural legends up on Instagram posts for people to see. And those pieces were very, very interesting. The third one was about, it was like a farewell letter type of call to 2020.
Yeah.
So it was called Desahogo al 2020, where people would just literally write about anything that had to do with, you know, what their experience with last year. It didn't necessarily have to be about the, you know, the virus or the pandemic. It could have been about anything in general, but within, you know, 2020.
Yeah. And
now the one that we have just officially launched is called Evolving. And it has the first four letters backwards, so it spells out love.
Yeah.
And the reason we have it like that is because we're asking everyone to write about any type of discrimination or unfortunate situations that they had to overcome, but through the practice of love, through the lens of love, which we all have done. Some overcome it through violence, but the most effective way has always been through the empathy and love. And, you know, of course, because you have to start loving yourself first to overcome those situations. Yeah. So that's where we're at now with the call for submission. That should come out probably by the end of February. Those should start coming out, yeah.
How's it been like starting a digital magazine? Have you had any challenges?
Yeah, it's definitely challenging. Especially because we registered this magazine as a nonprofit too. Yeah. So the biggest challenge has been, you know, as all nonprofits at the beginning, trying to first establish yourself so you could start requesting grants and funds so you could be able to, you know, do better things. Mm-hmm. And also compensate a lot of the writers and, you know, and the team. We have done some things where we have gone the route of that, specifically a workshop that we did too. So we're definitely moving in the right direction. But yeah, it's been challenging, specifically because of the time factor, more than because of the capacity of the editing team.
Okay.
You know, it's called El Equipito, because we are small as far as the number.
Yeah.
It's a solid group, you know, it's a solid group. And, you know, our editor-in-chief, Jorge, is extremely good. We have our managing editor, Roxana Calderon, who's extremely good too.
She's great.
Yeah, she has an eagle eye for editing. We have Melissa, who's in Puerto Rico. She's extremely good. She's extraordinary, an extraordinary writer.
Yeah.
And as an editor, I have definitely have not encountered many people as special as her when it comes to editing. So, you know, el malo soy yo en el equipo, and that's good, because you always have to strive to have a team that's better than you to fulfill your vision of what you're trying to do. You know, we have, you know, some contributors who, as editors, who once in a while pop in and out, like in JP, we have Angel Bogar, yeah. You know, they're part of the original Hennessy, so the first team, and they're in and out, you know, because they have a lot of things going on, a lot of projects, and that's understandable. But right now, the solid four, the core four, is Melissa, Roxana, Jorge, and myself. And, you know, to this point, we've done wonderful. Now, the challenge now is how to try to make the, you know, you always want to upgrade the website and things like that, you know, and the newsletter and stuff like that. And that's going to come at its time. We have been more worried about establishing relationships with a lot of writers.
Yeah.
And a lot of, there's a lot of groups and collectors of writers in different places and, you know, different countries who have started to share our stuff and collaborate with us. And we are looking forward to even a collaboration that we basically put on paper and over the phone. We agreed to it with this collector. They're out in LA.
Yeah.
Definitely want to, you know, stretch ourselves out there. Because Spanglish, of course, it's extremely heavy.
Yeah.
When it comes to the airwaves over there on the other side.
So during this time, it's been difficult for a lot, but I think it's been more difficult for our communities. Well, communities of color, any communities that is, we've lost a lot. Mostly communities of color, we lost a lot. But I've seen that even though through like the hard times, we still like are helping each other. But so what does community mean to you?
You know, it's very easy to give you like a cheesy response to that. And, you know,
community, yeah.
Solidarity, community means a collective of, you know, group of people working together. I would always say that it still has to depend a lot of empathy. Community definitely means empathy. Because once you really start to work your way to mastering empathy,
yeah,
everything else becomes much more easier. You're able to collaborate with each other. You're able to really care for each other and be very supportive of each other. You know, because sometimes you do, you know, everybody gets this shit. They go, oh no, you know, pat on my back, todo lo mío, and all this bullshit. But when push comes to shove, you definitely know that you, a lot, most times than none, you stand alone. In the shadow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the community part se fue a la mierda, ¿tú entiendes? A lot of people are more about community when it, you know, it fulfills their needs and their platforms or their things. But when it comes again to really talking about community, you're left in the dark. So I think it has to start through empathy, because empathy gives way through love. And you that's the only way you become extremely faithful to the idea of solidarity.
Yeah.
So that's community. That's community for me. You know, we have a lot of things that we could point out negatively in our community, but there's a lot of good that outweighs the bad.
Yeah.
And that's definitely important to highlight and beautiful. And it's always good to celebrate, because there is a lot of misunderstandings. There is a lot of people holding on to their own subjective views of life. But all it takes is that one moment for you just to extend your hand and invite someone to a conversation and a dialogue.
Yeah.
To really see how many things you have in common and how great you could be as a collective as opposed to an individual. And this is why I always put emphasis on the fact that you have to push for greater empathy within this community, so we could definitely get this community walking not uniform because everybody has to have their own identity, but definitely hand by hand when we must walk by each other. The pandemic has shown us in a weird way, unfortunately, to try to get to that. But then there was these little glimpses that you saw during the summer when everybody was just going fucking wild and forgot about that for a minute. And I don't mean because they were just out there with no mask or whatever. I just mean that they literally just forgot about that part of constructing that solidarity that we were on our way to doing. But I think this year we all have matured a lot, and I definitely am seeing it again. And I'm hopeful, you know. That's the only thing you could be. You have to be hopeful. You can't live your whole life always being pessimistic and close up. And believe me, I do have my moments where I fucking hate humans. But I do tend to, you know, dial it back and think, okay, you know, not everything is lost. I mean, this invitation we're here is a prime example of community.
Yeah.
You know, you reached out. You didn't have to reach out, you know, who the fuck am I? But you reached out because you saw value in whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
Accepted the invitation because I definitely saw value in what you're doing as well. And that's definitely a way of becoming greater together. That's community.
I mean, yeah, community is important right now. I think it's important to reach out to whoever's next to you instead of like someone that's already far away and really doesn't know a lot about your community. But what do you say to people that are like moving in and kind of like don't want to be part of the community?
Yeah, that's a tough struggle. And the funny thing that is not only, it's not exclusively to Blanquitos that are moving in.
No, it's not.
That shit is more prevalent in our own people and a lot of people from the African American community moving in. Because, you know, they're professionals. They're coming in from other towns that they lived in other places. They probably were away in college in this rural place somewhere else where they, you know, adapted a form of life that's extremely different from what we have going here. Not to say that what we've been having going on here has always been to get perfect tampoco. And that's part of the challenges that we ourselves have to face. How do we make those things that are negative on our side better so that those who come in don't think that they have the right to try to change us? Because it's our own fault when things start to change, even if there is a system in place.
Yeah.
Do we take care of ourselves? Do we take care of our local businesses? All of us, you know, are guilty of shopping over fucking Amazon when you could just go downstairs and buy that shit, you know. Why? Because of convenience. So then, you know, don't complain in a fucking chain. You know, a corporation comes in and just fucking wipes out all the supermarkets around here.
Yep.
And pushes everything out. So, you know, it's full circle. We have to also blame ourselves for people coming in and not trying to. And I wouldn't say that they have to assimilate, but at least respect what's been here, who we are.
Yeah.
But also we have to be open as well to some changes as well, because not everything that we've been doing here for years. I mean, you lived here during the 90s and you know how crazy it was.
Yeah.
We definitely live in a paradise now compared to, you know, back in the days. I mean, you from down post, you know how crazy it was in down post during the 90s. You know, I know a lot of people from that were from there that got killed. They used to go to school with me and were cool with me.
And got deported.
And some of them are still in jail for fucking 20 years already.
Yeah.
So we definitely, not everything that was going on was perfect. What I am extremely happy to see is that a lot of us who are from this community have come back as well, even though we left. And, you know, some of us got degrees, some of us didn't get degrees, but we still came back with a better mind frame and a healthier self. Because sometimes you do have to step away to come back in and contribute.
Yeah. Because
when you're in the eye of the hurricane and the circle, you're just drowning. So you have to sometimes get out, get air, and then come back, see it from outside, and then come back in and contribute. Now, if you just come back in to judge and try to be you and try to take advantage, then you're full of shit. You're just a toxic person.
Yeah.
But if you come back in and bring in whatever, you know, whatever you have learned through your space of, you know, of maturing, then you're definitely contributing to that better change for our community. I also think that we have to also try to try once in a while to reach out, because also, you know, you have to understand that when people come in and they get shocked at our way of how we have always lived our lives around here and how we do things around here, how we celebrate, how we're happy, how we're joyful, maybe inviting them over so they can understand it better allows some of them, because not all of them will, but at least some of them will, start to embrace, you know, our culture.
Yeah.
And it has happened. It has happened, because I know a lot of people who have, you know, moved into Washington Heights and they think that it's cool because they saw the Heights, see Luis Miranda, but then when they see that it's a different system and everything, they get a little bit overwhelmed. But then when they start speaking to us and start interacting with all of us, then they say, you know, this is definitely a fucking, Mohayama, this is definitely a Zion.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, this community with all its fault and all its past, it's definitely one of the few places in New York that you could definitely say that has the best fucking people in the city.
Yeah. And what is your message that you have for, like, the world? For anybody that's viewing this, what is your message?
Yeah, that's definitely lofty. I'd rather have give out a message to those who are next or closer to me.
Yeah.
Or have any media effect to try to speak to the world. It's kind of taking the role of a superhero, and that's, I'm far from that. But I would definitely, to all of those who listen to this and all of those who've seen my show, to all of those who listen to El Cafecito,
yeah,
I would definitely tell them to continue to, and again, I'm beating a dead horse over the head, but to continue to strive to better, como te digo, to better, to put into better practice empathy.
Yeah.
And I will continue to say that because it's the only way that you could start really opening up dialogues in a healthy manner. You know, they always say love and empathy goes together, and there's a reason that that's said. And it's not in the corny, like, romantic sense, cursi novela way. It's in, you know, it's in a real heavy way. And, you know, these are things that, you know, if an activist is listening to this, he or she will understand it. They will understand that. If a writer listens to that, they'll understand that as well, because it's the one thing that you gravitate to keep your sanity.
Yeah. But what if someone is listening to this right now and say, but how do you start? How do you practice empathy?
Yeah, so there's never a one singular formula, because if I tell you my experience, that's my experience.
Yeah.
But I could tell you this. When you start inviting others to that moment of trying to understand each other, which is a dialogue, it helps you construct and build that muscle memory for empathy. Because through the disagreements and through the agreements, you start to better understand a lot of the situations around us, specifically individual situations that affect the self. Because only when you speak to someone else and you hear their story is when you start to realize a lot of your shit and your story. And that's why empathy is so fucking heavy and strong.
Yeah. And my last question, what are you grateful for?
For everything. I mean, during this pandemic, I'm one of those fortunate souls that, you know, was able to continue to work, you know, from home. No one in my family really got sick. My father did pass away in June, but that was at his own doing because he was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Friends that I have, the family that I have in the Dominican Republic, they're all doing well as well, considering the circumstances and a lot of the shit that's going on out there.
Yeah.
And every day I continue to meet new, interesting, and wonderful, extraordinary, healthy people. You know, they are really trying to not only better themselves, but they're really trying to help everyone in it. And with, through their friendship, I become a better person every day, and I'm grateful for that. You know, that's why I'm grateful for everything. You know, I have a job that I like. You know, I have platforms that, you know, they might not be, you know, my talk show is not on fucking Showtime, but, you know, it has a following, and I'm happy with those two people that follow it because they value what I'm doing, you know.
And it's impactful. Your the Sala talks, I find it very impactful, very insightful. And I personally have learned stuff from them, even stuff that I like thought I was aware of, but all the I was like, oh wow, like I wasn't aware of that. So yeah.
I definitely hearing that testimony definitely makes me happy, you know, and it gives, you know, it gives a lot of strength to me to continue to want to do more with that and Spanglish Bosses too. Because again, I didn't start these platforms for any clout or to get a bunch of followers, and because I knew that I was taking a role that was going to be difficult. I genuinely did it because I think that if we all try to do things that promote critical thinking, we will definitely start to contribute to that blueprint of a healthier community.
Yeah.
And you can't ask for more, you know. So I'm definitely grateful for everything.
Have you ever been discouraged?
I mean, we all are, but as a human being, you know, if anyone says that they haven't, they're fucking delusional. But we all have. But then you get, you know, I get that moment where I hear something like what you just finished saying, or I see the value myself of a lot of things that are going on with what we're doing. And I just keep pushing forward.
Yeah.
I do a lot of shit. My job is not 9 to 5. It's extremely stressful and I have to do a lot. These platforms, they take up a lot also.
Yeah, they do.
So a lot of people, you know, and there's other things that I do too. Like I contribute to a lot of nonprofit groups and social movements here and out of this country too.
Yeah.
And people will ask me, how the fuck do you do so much? And you haven't like dropped dead one day. And believe me, sometimes it gets discouraging, frustrating. Not because because I don't really need anyone to notice or to tell me to go, oh, you do that. I don't need that shit.
Yeah.
Definitely want people to join. Even if it's from their own space, not join me, but, you know, contribute with what you're doing. And then let's collaborate. Because the more of us collaborate, you know, the faster we can get to that space that we're trying to build in this community.
That's true. So thank you, Edwin, for saying yes to this conversation. Thank you for
inviting me.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And do you have anything that you gotta promote, or like, where can people follow you?
Yeah, so when La Sala Talks, you put it on Google and you're going to find every platform there. It's the same. La Sala Talks on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course, we have the YouTube channel, and it's also La Sala Talks. Así mismo. Yeah. Get hold of Spanglish Voices, the same. We're on IG, we're Spanglish Voices on Twitter and on Facebook. And the magazine, you could look at, you could Google it and it'll come up right away, but you could also, on the IG account, you could go to the link tree. And you'll find the link there that goes directly to the site for the magazine. Could share. I just ask everyone to share. Share whatever they read in Spanglish Bosses. There's a lot of dope writers that need to be celebrated.
Yeah.
We tend to not celebrate our own local talents, or, and, you know, some of the writers are not even locally from here, but I still consider them local talent because they're doing their thing and they're not part of the mainstream. We've run when we see anyone from mainstream or anyone who has made it, you know, they already made it. We don't have to keep celebrating them. You know, that, yeah, they got this whole other crowd of blanquitos. Yeah. You know, let's celebrate our own and let's create platforms that, well, we don't have to depend on the fucking mainstream.
Yeah.
To be successful. So yeah, definitely ask people to share. Share La Sala, share what we have on Spanish Exposures. Look out for the new, you know, when we make an open call for submission, right? Send it over to us too. We also want to hear from people from around here as well. And definitely share this this conversation forward.
Yes, I will. I'm gonna put everything in the show notes, like all your links where people can find you. Oh, and cool. The video will be posted on like on the YouTube, and then like the audio will be posted like on the podcast.
Ah, no, bien. Ah, pues si tú me habías dicho que esto iba para YouTube, yo me iba para todo maquillaje.
No.
That's cool.
That's cool. Well, thank you so much for saying yes to this.
All right. Thank you for inviting me.
If you like this episode, please rate and review this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.